Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Stone Chapel Podcast. I'm David Capes. Hope you're having a great week. Glad you're back with us. Today on the podcast, Dr. Carolyn Weber. She's a professor, an author, a speaker. She's born in Canada and now resides in Tennessee with her husband, Kent. There are four children, dogs, and chickens. Yes, chickens. She's written a wonderful memoir entitled Surprised by Oxford. It's been published by Thomas Nelson Publishing. Her book is so good that it was made into a feature-length film. It's a good film, too. It's a love story. It's an intellectual and spiritual journey. We want you to know about it. Jenny Enright, who's the associate director here at the Lanier Theological Library, is the one that first told me about this book and how much she loved it. So she's going to be my co-host today. So today, Carolyn Weber on the Stone Chapel Podcast.
Hello, I'm Carolyn Weber. I'm a professor, author, and lover of God and literature.
Dr. Carolyn Weber. Carolyn, or is it Caro or Carolyn?
Either one is fine. Caro, you can do Caro, David.
Well, Caro is, that's what we call my daughter-in-law, who's Carolina. She's from Italy, but we call her Caro as well. But anyway, it's great to see you.
Lovely.
Welcome to our podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a delight to be here.
Yeah, you were here this past weekend at the Lanier Theological Library for a lecture weekend, and a lot of people have been talking about your book, reading your book, recommending your book around here, and I wanted to have a chance to talk with you about it. Now, joining me today is my sidekick. No, not really a sidekick. She's the associate director of the library. Her name is Jenny Enright.
Yeah.
Now, you're the one that told me about the book,
yes,
originally, I think, and about the fact that you were reading and how much you loved it. That's one of the reasons that I snagged you and said, come on, let's do a podcast. So for those who don't know, who is Carolyn Weber?
Oh, well, it's so lovely to be with both of you again. Lanier Library is a very special place. I am a literature professor. I have been for a long time, many years. I teach currently now at New College Franklin, which is a small Christian classical school that I just adore in Franklin, Tennessee. We moved here from Canada most recently a couple of years ago. And I'm also an author and speaker on intersections particularly of faith and literature. And I grew up in Canada, a mid-sized town, and I grew up without a faith, without much of a faith at all, sort of an agnostic, I would say, define my position, and ended up doing my graduate work at Oxford University. And that's where I was surprised indeed by Oxford and became a Christian there through my studies and friendships.
Now, we're talking today for the rest of our time about your book, Surprised by Oxford, which is published by Thomas Nelson Press. And it's a fabulous, it's a memoir. It's about your life. And it's a beautiful book. And it's a story about your life that has been made into a feature film. When did that release?
The film came out last year and had a debut in theaters. And now it's streaming. I believe it's available on Apple and on Amazon.
Right.
Yeah. So that was last year. But the book itself was came out, I believe, the same time Jenny joined all of you, which was about 2011. So there's multiple surprises in this. I never saw the film happening. That's very surreal. And I never anticipated writing a memoir either, David. Oh, my goodness. That was a surprise, too.
Well, you know, nobody's ever asked to do a film of one of my books. So, I mean, I'm impressed to be able to talk to somebody whose book and story has caught the attention and the imagination of so many people. Tell us a little bit about your story and what sort of happens in the pages of Surprised by Oxford.
Well, as I said, I had never anticipated writing a memoir. I was an academic primarily. That was where my line of work was, in English studies. And I had alluded briefly before that I grew up kind of loosely Catholic, parents, grandparents, and fell away from my faith as my parents were divorced. They fell on hard times. And really grew up having to sort of provide a lot for myself as a result, and various hardships there. And like we all face, I guess. But when I, by the time I won a Commonwealth scholarship to study at Oxford University, which is really comparable to something like a Rhodes, you know, in the States. So it was a huge opportunity. And I was, of course, really excited and grateful, but also really, really homesick. When I got there, I was studying world religions for my MPhil at the time, and very cynical, skeptical towards God. I think on a very deeply personal level, too. I wasn't going to trust in an eternal father when my earthly father was not trustworthy, and I had a lot of academic and intellectual questions. But as I started studying these other religions and eventually meeting other Christians and started reading the Bible for myself, it just opened this whole other world. And it actually became what I ended up probably studying even and reading about even more so than my own studies sort of happening for me. And so over the course of my first year at Oxford, I eventually became a Christian, much like Lewis describes, you know, sort of kicking and fighting the most reluctant convert. But that's what happened to me. So I had unbelieving family, unbelieving friends. Predominantly, I was in a profession that was really antagonistic towards faith, particularly the Christian faith, and yet had this experience, this story. And eventually, years later, it percolated for some time. I decided to write about it. And that's where the book came from.
In your book, you talk about so many meaningful relationships you develop when you're at Oxford with fellow students and professors that help impact your faith journey. Can you tell us about a couple of those?
Well, spoiler alert, is one of the first people to really articulate the gospel clearly to was my husband. He wasn't at the time, but somebody eventually that I ended up, having a relationship and wearing. But at the time, we were just not even friends. He was actually really irritating because I think we can assume that people know the gospel and they don't, you know, or they haven't heard it clearly, or certainly if you hear it through the media, it's not a representation really of who Jesus is. I had no concept of a personal relationship with God. I had never really been asked, who is God to you? I had never really been invited to ask questions about those big things. My life had always been busy and running like it is for so many people. But also we tend to often lead with the questions of, you know, why would there be suffering or why would there be pain or where is God, instead of actually really thinking who he is to us. And then not really thinking through when the gospel is presented to you, what that line in the sand is. So I ended up just meeting people in my college. What was interesting about the Commonwealth Scholarship is there's people from all over the world, many from wealthy countries, many from very poor countries. The Commonwealth is expansive. And I was there as a Canadian. And I met Christians from of all stripes and all places that believed in this same God and this same Savior. That was mind-blowing, you know, that people would have that relationship and define this person and this belief in similar terms from all over the globe. I was also moved by the fact that these people had a deep joy and a deep hope that I couldn't quite put my finger on. So there was a global influence in the graduate community because that's really quite cosmopolitan. But within my college, I was really blessed to have been shaped and challenged by a couple of professors that were Christians, some overt, some not. I had actually two masters of my colleges, both colleges I were at, that were very influential in my faith, seeing them live out their faith in a very real way, with kindness and compassion and really caring for their students. And I hadn't really experienced that before either, that kind of hospitality, that kind of personal care. Oftentimes, I think in larger universities, especially in North America, not only are we so incredibly busy and drinking that opiate, but we're also so incredibly anonymous. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a juggernaut in a way, and you can just move along and do your studies and not take really any responsibility for your ideas, but also not really even being invited into anyone's home. And so I was challenged in so many ways by the care of college life and by thoughtful, intelligent Christians, people who had this faith that makes sense, but people who were widely read, who were thinking questions, who were on all different types of fields, it really challenged my stereotypes and presuppositions and opened up so many other things I had been reading, but deepened them as well.
So it sounds like there's just a number of people that were a part of sort of feeding into that time in your life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of key people for sure.
Right.
A couple of the professors I identify, you know, as well in the book. But yes, but also the graduate school community and then the C.S. Lewis Society there and There were just lots of really vibrant Christian thinkers. And St. Ebb's Church, too, which is where I did start to sort of explore things.
Well, your book, Surprised by Oxford, sounds a little bit like Lewis's book, Surprised by Joy. And obviously, C.S. Lewis plays a big part in your own faith journey.
Absolutely, hands down. I would say without a doubt, he's my favorite author. And I don't say that lightly because I have so many that I adore. And I would have come to him kicking and screaming, reluctant as well, because I knew him from the Narnia series. But when I was first introduced to reading more of him, I had this presupposition of, oh, really, what kind of theologian could he be? Or how interesting could this be? I really knew him primarily from a literary standpoint, from my studies of Milton, and had great respect for him as an academic. So when I began to read more of his thoughts, obviously in something like Mere Christianity, which really just laid out the faith and made so much sense, but also that there was such a wide range of genres that he had written, that I was reading his sci-fi and reading him on grief and reading him on studying literature, which of course is my Achilles heel, and on allegory and myth and all these things. I mean, he was everywhere and so thoughtful about it. And I always felt like I was just having a cup of tea with him while I was reading it, that eventually he really shaped my faith. I felt like he asks the questions that are in our own head and he answers them, and not in a heavy-handed way, but in this really invitational way. So sometimes it's very logic-based and very Socratic, and other times it's very imaginative. It felt to me as though he was anticipating the arrows I was throwing at the faith myself, and he would catch them and examine them and ask them as well. And he had asked them as well. He came with this great sort of personal ethos, you know, what he had gone through in his own life and from his love of literature. You know, he didn't throw them back at me barbed. And so it was like a great inner conversation that also I felt very much like when he says, you know, one of the advantages to reading is you can become like a thousand men, but never lose your own identity. I felt like that reading him, that, you know, I don't have to lose the sense of who he is as the main author, but I get exposed to so many other thinkers. And many of the other thinkers I had read already, or poets, Herbert Dunn, that sort of thing, I had read as a student myself, but I had not really had the understanding of how they clicked into the overall larger story of Christianity. And so he was very, very instrumental in putting those pieces together for me and helping me see that those questions had a place and that I was invited to the table of this great story.
So you've got this radical hospitality taking place in the college. You're now being exposed to ideas and questions that you felt at some level, but you never had articulated maybe before.
One thing that stuck out at me in the book, you say you can't unhear the gospel. Mm-hmm. So I was going to ask you to expand on that.
You can't unhear it, because I think when you do hear what Jesus did for us, who he is, and how God came as him to create a righteous relationship, to restore that through his death and through his life, and we're forced to answer who Jesus is to us, you can't unhear it. You can't unthink it. So even if it tremendously bothers you, it's highly inconvenient because it would just be simpler if we were all pantheists and God was just everywhere and it was easygoing and you didn't really have to draw a line in the sand. But to actually think, is he liar, lunatic, Lord? You know, those kind of questions. Because if he isn't crazy and if he isn't lying, then now what?
What do we do with it, right? Exactly.
What do we do with this? And it has a way of tenderling. You know, I think I give a lot of credit for some people who see it right away. But I think there's also a time in which it just sort of tendrils up. His name has a power like no one else's name. You say the name of Jesus and it gets people's knickers in a knot like no one else. Right. There's something else happening there. And there's some other power happening there, because I think it forces us to define who and what we serve. And we all serve something, which is also why I wrote my book. Even when we say we don't, we do. And even declaring we don't serve something is a form of servitude. So who and what are we serving? And when we start to really think about those questions, who is God to you? Who do you say I am? Who is Jesus then, if he was here historically, and if his claims are credible, how do you answer those things? Because the way that we answer them have eternal repercussions and they change everything.
Indeed, they do.
Like no other question does, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. No other question has that power.
So your book is a spiritual journey, but it's also a love story as well.
Yes, it is.
It sort of starts with Kent and his irritating, aggravating pursuit of you. And then along the way, he just wore you down.
Well, probably the other way around. I probably wore him down with all my words. And as he would joke and say, you know, I was asking questions about questions he had never even thought of. You know, he's a PK, a pastor's kid, and we know they all speak Klingon and have their own thing. And he was studying the church fathers. And so he was probably well girded and he had all these answers. But I think what I was most moved by and struck by was actually when he didn't have the answers and he was honest about that, that my God couldn't fit in a box either. What he embodied and what he was extending. Again, he's not perfect. No one is. But to see the difference, I think, between friendship and fellowship, that really struck me. Tolkien calls it, you know, the fellowship of the ring, not the friendship of the ring. And it's a reason, you know, friendship is great. You can get to know folks and whatever else. But I do feel like Bonnachan says there's this shining barrier. You know, as soon as you are connected in Christ, it's something deeper. It runs deeper immediately, even if you're strangers and you've met. Mm-hmm. And I could see this fellowship. It really is where the really real happens, the really real. Mm-hmm. And I wanted that. We all want that. We all mm-hmm. long for what Jesus offers us. And also the relationship that he allows to us to be real in, that the truth does set us free. And again, it's not perfect on this side of heaven, but it's freedom. And I saw that modeled in these friendships that were fellowships among Christians and how it was being extended to me to do this life together. I had been longing for that. I mean, I just resonated so deeply with so much in the Bible, but especially with how people respond to Jesus, how he meets them where they're at and how he can meet them at the well or at the top of a tree, or, you know, they can come from his hometown that's good for nothing, you know, like I do. And it's immediately real with him. And it can be like that with each other and him as well.
Well, we're talking to Carolyn Weber about her book, Surprise by Oxford. It's a memoir, beautiful story, well told, also in cinema, beautifully represented by some great, great visuals of Oxford. I want to thank you for being with us today on the Stone Chapel podcast. I wish we had about another hour.
Me too.
There's a lot here to talk about. I mean, there's so much about it.
You just have to read the book.
Just read the book. That's exactly right. And you can find it here at the Lanier Theological Library.
Yes, you can.
Or you can go to Amazon and other Thomas Nelson. Get your own copy. Carolyn, we look forward to another time to chat.
Oh, thank you. Me too. God bless both of you.
Thank you.
You too. Thanks to Jenny Enright, who's been my co-host for this podcast. Thanks to Carolyn Weber for a great book and a great conversation. I could have talked with her all day long, maybe on another occasion, but hope she'll be back with us. Thanks to Kathy Capes for editing and helping produce this podcast. Thanks to Phil Keggy for our music. We want to welcome some new listeners to this podcast in India. Yes, India, halfway around the world, at least from where I am. We're glad that you're listening. I hope you'll share it with some friends. If you have questions, comments, or you just want to be in touch, please email us at podcast@lanierlibrary.org. That's podcast@lanierlibrary.org. We'll do our best to answer you. Until next time, I'm David Capes, and thanks for listening.